any burning questions? Senator Shabbard?
I just had one. When you talked about Nebraska's hyper progressive income tax, that we kick in a tax from dollar one.
Right.
Dollar one, is that really dollar one, or is that after you had a bunch of dollars before dollar one?
Dollar one and net taxable income.
So you get, you don't have to file a return. And can you give us some general idea if you know at what point do you have to file a return, that first bite is not taxable?
It's just so dependent on every individual circumstance. But I mean, generally, if you don't have to file a federal return, if you don't have enough income to have a federal liability, then you don't have to file a Nebraska return. I can't give you a set dollar EDI income level because it just varies. Everybody's exemptions, credits, elderly. Okay, Bill, you want to come back up?
If I look at it at the statewide level, which is what these numbers are, and I look at saying 94% of total tax was levied on real property and therefore 6 on personal property. Personal property is business equipment, machinery, agricultural equipment, machinery. That percentage will change every year that we have a property tax in place because the mix of value and taxes will change every year. But it gives you a general perspective that can be updated. I think the most valuable thing to do is look at change over time. And as it turns out, as things change over time, we've been through, I did a run the other day, 1997 to current, and I watched the mix of tax and value change from predominantly residential, and it's still predominantly residential, to a smaller share for ag in the midpoint of the period around 2005. And then if you start looking at the last 3 years, you're going to see ag gaining in share of taxes paid because it's a bigger share of the value base out there now because of rapid increases in agricultural land values. Depreciable tangible personal property is actually a little higher than what's shown on here currently in 2012, but not much. And that's why these numbers are approximate 90 and 10. That's in a relationship that you've been generally count on historically, since the late 1970s, I'll call it. At the bottom of this slide, you see it says no intangibles, household goods, or business or farm inventory. The process that we went through when we changed the state tax system in 1967 was not only a process of switching to using state sales and income tax to finance state government and therefore not using property tax, but we also changed our base for the property tax. We had at that point been taxing household goods, business and farm inventories. Over time, we began to exempt those things, and now they're not part of our tax base, nor are intangibles, which as a defined term means value in the form of a savings account or investment. It proved a very difficult thing to tax for states, and most states have abandoned the concept, and as has Nebraska. Household goods, maybe there's some levity in tax stories, but back when we used to tax household goods, people would come to your house and see if you had a piano, but they would also check to see if you had a working farm dog, and they would assign value to it if it was a dog that worked. But a dog that didn't hunt probably didn't have any value. That's how strange the property tax system was for a long, long time for people. They had to have their household goods examined by a locally elected assessor, including items that you normally wouldn't think of being taxable. Motor vehicles are exempt now as a result of the 1997 change, but we have a replacement excise tax found in Section 60 of state law. We talked about that a little bit. But that's now not part of our value base. It's no longer part of the value sector. These percentages are approximate on real estate taxable value. Again, they get changed every year, but they give you a perspective on what share of value, different concept, and what share of taxes, different concept, are by economic sectors, which, quite frankly, I created these groupings. But they're fairly typical. We've been using them for about 10 years. So you can see that the biggest share of values in the residential sector, today that figure's lower. In 2012, as a result of growing ag land value and flat residential value, if not declining. This is a time series chart that shows the growth rates. The top line is property taxes if they had grown at the rate of personal income growth. The second line that you can see, is property taxes net, Tom's number again, netting out homestead and credit, and how that's grown through 2009. And what it shows is a slower rate of growth than the rate of growth in personal income. And the bottom yellow line would be property taxes if they had grown at inflation. This is share of use. This remains about the same in 2012. I checked it yesterday and the day before, and quite frankly, you're at that level of use where schools, and we generally state it this way, are 60% of the property tax use. Now, sometimes when we present things like this at a statewide level and we say this is the percentage of use, as an individual taxpayer, if you live outside the limits of a city and you look at your tax bill, your percentage of tax paid to a school district would be higher than this percent, if that makes sense to you, because you would have the city levies imposed on you. City use is shown in here. So at a certain level, sometimes when I do this analysis, I go school district by school district and divide up the value of tax share, and it's quite different. In some places, value is 70% ag land, and school is, 65 to 80% sometimes of tax use. So the property tax is structured locally. It's a local tax. You need to think about it locally and think of it in that context. You can be in a school district where ag land is 70% of the value and pay 70% of the taxes. You can be in a school district where ag land, as a value category, is less than 1% of the total tax base. So these concepts with the property tax are a lot about proportions and percentages. They get complicated. One that's not complicated and found in state law is the only preferential or classified rate of value taxation that we have in Nebraska is the ag land preferential rate of 75%. If you looked at this in comparison to other states, you would find that other states tax ag land at anywhere from 20 to 30%, value ag land at anywhere from 20 to 30% of its market value, as opposed to our 75% standard. we'll be exploring this in some detail, in part because we have an interim study on this topic. We have constitutional limitation and uniformity clause, which has to be amended if you were going to do preferential value or classified value policies. It has been amended so that we can do that in the area of ag land, although its language suggests that within the category of ag land, it has to be uniform as a percentage of value based on different ag land types. And I noted here that our Supreme Court has interpreted this provision very strictly and interpreted it as market value for real property. Exemptions are available for personal property. One of the most recent ones that the legislature has passed involves wind turbines and the associated property. They were exempted, but made subject to a nameplate capacity tax. The homestead exemption is a policy that we have to relieve the property tax burden of low-income elderly households and certain disabled persons. And what that does is essentially the state picks up the cost of the homeowner's property taxes. So it's a funded exemption versus a value exemption, which would not be able to be taxed. It's a funded exemption. That is in fact part of our state budget. Costing us about $65 million the last time I looked. We have levy limits. We have had levy limits, and again, to use terminology, the levy, as I use it, will be the rate against the value. We have levy limits. We have had them since the 1875 Constitution and statutes had levy limits for every unit of government. There was a period in our history, beginning in the 1950s, about 54, where where schools were levy limits were repealed effectively, and then we reinstituted levy limits for schools in 1998. But every government that we have now in Nebraska has a statutory levy limit rate which can be exceeded by a vote. We have budget limits. Those are limits on receipts growth, where we count up specified receipts and determine that the rate of growth cannot be higher than 2.5% or an additional 1% with 3/4 vote of the board. But you do get growth in annexation. Annexed value produces additional room for growth and construction of new property. If you build more houses or build more businesses inside your value base, you get a calculation that adds to growth. There are some exceptions, capital expenditures, bonded debt, interlocal agreements, and judgments. There are many procedural aspects of property tax. We have what I described earlier, the Tax Equalization and Review Commission, which adjusts classes of value within counties and across county lines, and does that using a set of statistical procedures that are outlined in statute. They do that with the assistance of state officials who work for the Department of Revenue, and they analyze the statistics, and the counties are held accountable for meeting certain statistical levels and standards. We have a process for individuals to protest their values first to their county board of equalization, and then to the state for the Tax Equalization Review Commission. This is a list that I think it's important for you to think about, and I actually have a document that I'd like to provide you at a future point. But this gives you a rough idea of the way states have approached property tax relief by setting policy mechanisms. I'll mention the last one, particularly because I talked about it earlier, shifting funding from the local government to the state. In other words, we pick up the cost of the program the locals have been funding. Motor vehicle tax, we've talked about that. Our schedule is based on the age and weight of the vehicle. It's a quantity basis tax. This is a chart again showing its growth. If you notice the blue line, which is actual motor vehicle tax and fee, we have a fee structure that supplements the tax structure. You'll see that line is very flat and it has continued flat in recent years. Motor vehicle tax receipts are not a strong growing receipt form for local governments. This money is distributed to schools. They get 60% of the motor vehicle tax on your car. If you live in a city, I got the percentages here. If you live in a city, 22% goes to the county, 18% of your city, except if you live in the state's largest city. In Douglas County, I'm sorry. The policy is Douglas County. And then the city and county shares are reversed. And if the auto is not registered in the city, the county receives the entire 40%. That's a variation from uniform policy that was adopted the year after we adopted the repeal statute. Schedules that have statute, these numbers, of course, need updating, but Tom already kind of gave you pressure numbers. And I'm going to move to sales tax. And we have a national sales tax expert who's going to talk to you this afternoon. I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about our sales tax, but I am going to tell you that from my general view, it is a broad-based sales tax, but it has two characteristics that were originally in 1967. We tax all tangible personal property, durable and non-durable goods, if you like, immediately, but we only tax a service if it's listed as a taxable service. So two principles of drafting or implementation of the law that need to be cognizant of. There's no exempt amount standards in any of our statutes. I shouldn't skip over that quite so dramatically. In some places, there's actually purchase exemptions. And I'm not familiar with all of them, but sometimes partial purchase exemptions exist or partial rates. This is a growth rate chart at the end, the top blue line, total state and local tax receipts, but only through 2009. You can see that decline that we went into as we went into the recession. How is it used? Most of it goes to the state general fund, although there's city local option sales tax, and a portion goes into the highway trust fund. And now a portion of the sales tax that used to go to the state general fund goes to a specific highway funding program separate from that. This is mostly the discussion of what we expect to see as council and staff to the revenue committee on sales tax legislation. There's an important example here. Recent examples of change include manufacturing machinery and equipment, where we exempted it from 2005. But we also have worked on the areas of construction labor and how we tax it, and some purchases by housing authorities and other companies. It seems to me, as staff, that we constantly are reworking and rethinking our exemption structure every year, but the basic principles are the ones that you're going to hear about this afternoon from our background. See the term streamlined sales and use tax agreement. This is an agreement that we have entered into with many other states.
25,
I'm sure. This is to enforce our use tax when you participate in a mail order sale or internet purchase of an item and have it shipped to you from a vendor or retailer in another state. We believe you owe the state of Nebraska use tax because you put it in use in Nebraska. There is this compact between the states to try to enforce and implement use tax collection, and to a certain extent, they've invested heavily in uniform collection methods and definitions of taxable transactions. We've come into compliance with a set of uniform definitions. But the ultimate implementation of this policy depends on an act of Congress. Recently, that's been debated, U.S. Senate approval, stalled in the House.
Right. The U.S. Senate vote was actually a sense of the Senate vote that should the bill come before the Senate officially, would you vote for it? And there was a large majority that said they would vote for it if it came before the Senate officially.
The reason it takes federal action is because it's an interstate commerce issue, and there are lawsuits that have gone from the U.S. Supreme Court that say that the state cannot enforce, it doesn't have nexus to enforce a sales tax on a remote seller who sells brokers in the interstate, and it takes congressional action to effectively overturn or overrule that decision. This is the part where I would have normally gone to individual income tax rule, but I think you've heard a lot about that.
Okay.
I breezed through fairly quickly. And did you want to stop the phone?
Yes, I think we've got about 2 minutes left before Ms. Bobber breaks. Tom's still here. Tom, do you want to pull the chair up? Does anybody have any general questions? I realize it was fast, but we wanted to give you the information so you can take it home at your leisure. There will be an exam for the audience. We'll give an exam on any questions?
I have one. Briefly, someone talked about the
patient gap. It's probably
not asking. Dr. Patient gap. Occupation gap, does she really have a good definition that I've ever seen?
and it's being used differently around the state. In the West, where we have irrigation projects, it's used as a real estate addition, but in larger towns, it looks like a sales tax.
It does. Look like a sales tax.
But it doesn't out west, it's where they do irrigation projects.
Well.
Because that's, they actually buy the land and it's added to their real estate.
Here's what I would say about occupation tax structures found in state law. We've started to examine in the last couple of years, there's been some changes in policy at the state level, and the telecommunications occupation tax area. Tom and I are discussing as we keep cranking these numbers, how we feel like we should be able to quantify the occupation tax yield to local governments. Last fall, I started on a project reviewing audits of cities to see if I could quantify the occupation tax collected by city, and along with the yield tax, which is a form of occupation tax. And I ran up a total of about $180 million by looking at the audits that I could look at that were online. We do have an interim study for the revenue committee to introduce, and we will try to look at it, and we're going to try and get better at the numbers. We will never be able to blend them into Tom's presentation about their percentage of, or their historical growth rate or anything like that, because we haven't been giving them data. But we decided this last summer, and we talked about how to make that effort and how to do it. The other thing that we partially did is we started making an inventory list of occupation tax structures, what things are subject to occupation tax. So we should be able to better answer that question in the future as to how they're structured and how they're used and who uses them. But right now, we're suffering from a paucity of data. That's the response to
the question. Yeah, it seems like, you know, if the city or county or NRD wants to raise taxes, they put it on occupation taxes.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
I mean, it's kind of a loophole.
Yes, and I'm sorry. You're
changing the name.
You were making a reference too to another thing, the revenue committee, and you have dealt with as a member, which is the water occupation tax, which technically are authorized in a separate section of statute. But yes, I'm sorry, I ignored those and don't respond to you.
Andy?
My question, is for Tom. Tom, is there a history? And I won't write it, I'll write it on my request if you say yes. Is there a history of the homestead exemption by year so we can see what it has done? Okay, I'll put it on my chart. And is there also one of the property tax credit, who uses it? I'll mention it. The second part of my question, I'll put it down as well. The second question I had is you said the state levies 55% and uses 35, and I just can't write that. What did you say the local percentage, do you remember, that they levy and then use?
Yeah, they would actually, it would be the opposite. They levy 45%. It would be the opposite of
45.
Right.
Thank you. And that is their own dollars, not anything that comes.
Right, that'd be the property tax.
Or state aid or anything.
I include property tax and city sales tax, and even though we authorize it, they levy it. So
would it include Senator Hansen's question? Would that include that figure on occupation tax?
It would not, because that was one of the holes that we do have in that data that we don't have. There's not a good place. There is not a single place that collects that. Those types of data that Phil was talking about.
This is the chart that we're looking at.
Thanks, I appreciate that. And I just wanted to add, I don't want to worry about it, but we have a request for a tax also on ag evaluation. But I just want to clarify, did you state, Bill, that we have a 75% valuation in the state? Mm-hmm. Surrounding states, I think you commented on their methodology.
That we did a public study in 1999 where we compared the methodology was we called effective tax rates.
total market value divided by the taxes levied against that market, expressed against that market value. And what we found was that the effective tax rates in Kansas and a couple of other states were about 1/3 to 40%, 30% to 40% of ours, meaning that they were much, much lower. And that's a result of valuation methodology that they used there. And then recently, as I started to update those numbers and I've been looking at Iowa, I discovered that they descended, I guess, to that level as well. So yes, it's something that we have under a magnifying glass, I guess, at this point, we're studying it. But historically, what we've observed is that Nebraska taxes agricultural land at a much higher effective tax rate than other states, and particularly our native. And it tends to be for a couple of reasons. There's a first concept called ag use value, meaning we tax it at the use it's in, not its highest and best use. The second concept, and that concept, by the way, was amended in your state constitution. The second concept is that it's a classification concept, where you say, if I determine the market value in ag use is $5,000 an acre, I can tax 75% of that market value. And that is a much higher percentage of effective tax level and rate than you'll find in any of your mortgage states. And particularly Kansas.
Thank you.
Okay.
I had a question. Tom, in your presentation, would it be fair to say an overall takeaway from that is Nebraska is basically relatively in the middle when it comes to the revenue and the expenditure side? Is that a fair statement?
Right. That's about where we are in a lot of
it. Yeah. Basically, you have states that are worse. Better, but effectively we're in the middle.
By these means.
And one other comment, and it was to Mary Jane. I guess I did not understand that recapture provision on the income tax, which could impact high income people, correct? Because if they get over $750,000.
Over $165,000. It starts to kick in at $165,000. Whatever it was, 173, 650. That's when it starts. That's when we start going back. And incrementally, once you're above that AGI level, we incrementally start going back. So if your AGI was like maybe 180,000, you'd only recapture the first part. We wouldn't recapture all of the preferential rate. It's until you get up to that 770, whatever, thousand. That's where now it's all been recaptured and everything from that point forward. This tax is the highest rate.
Highest rate.
We all use in our work bar graphs and charts that show us how an effective tax rate works, and I think that might actually be useful to see your bar graph of how the income tax rate in terms of taxation in different at a different income.
We have time for one more.
Sure.
Thank you, Senator Chairman Abbott. So what is the total amount of recapture? I was looking at the graph and it says, so 0 to 2,400, it says $61.44. So if you recapture the maximum.
You go back and you calculate, yeah, in theory what you're doing is you're going back to that first dollar of taxable income up to the first bracket, and you're recapturing the difference between the 2.56 and the 6.84.
Okay, mm-hmm. So the max you can recover is $1,086. Is that right? I don't know if that's right. I don't think that's right. Maybe I'll talk to you. Yeah, he's going. Probably older than that. Okay, it's noon. We're going to take a lunch break. The team's going to take lunch down in where the cafe used to be. We're going to hear from the center. Early, if anybody wants, then you certainly can, or you can pick up. No, okay.
Not really.
Okay, so we're taking a lunch break. We're going to start again at 1:30.